absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
Hello, my name's Anne Fox, and this is the 60th show of Absolutely Intercultural, the podcast about all things intercultural, which today is coming to you from Denmark. In many cultures, 60 of anything marks a celebration. For example, if you've been married for 60 years, then that's your diamond jubilee and everybody has to give you diamonds. Well, the only gems in this show will be the treasures we've unearthed for your listening pleasure. We hope you like them, and thank you very much for staying with us over 60 shows since March 2006. If there's something you'd like to hear more about, or you would just like to leave us a comment, then please go to www.absolutely-intercultural.com and add it to our blog. I must say that I was very much in agreement with the piece in the last show about personal improvement plans, but not so sure how much listening to the lyrics of English pop music would improve your English, no matter how good the music. One of the worst favours I was ever asked to do was to edit some English song lyrics written by a Danish songwriter. Why? Because ungrammatical and meaningless phrases are just art in this context. Another example was when I was asked by some students for the meaning of Twisted in My Sobriety, a one-hit wonder by Tanita Tikaram, and I was really struggling to explain it. So what have we got for you today? Firstly, I went to the closing event of a European project all about using sound in vocational education. Students had done all sorts of sound-related work, including a collaborative project with a university in Turkey. This final event took place in a large hall in the city of Aarhus and included displays and experiences such as a blind restaurant. And that's where you eat in complete darkness so that your other senses come to the fore. One of the events was a Skype video conference with the Turkish university, and that's what we're going to hear in this show. Then I attended a chat show featuring one of Britain's celebrity chefs, Jesse Dunford Wood. This was another of the events offered by Language Lab, the online language school based in Second Life. One of the attractions of going to these events is that you can participate by asking questions yourself. We'll be hearing about the difference between a chef and a cook, and why the athletes had to bring their own food to the London Olympics in 1948. So what comes to mind when I say British food? Would you go to a British restaurant for a special treat? Let's go absolutely culinary and hear the introduction to the chat show and see if your reactions are the same as the language learners who gathered to take part in the Second Life session in the Language Lab City.
Food. I have lived in many countries around the world. I've lived in the Middle East. I've lived in Latin America, in the Far East, in Europe. And one subject I find everybody is interested to talk about, no matter what culture they're from, is food. Being English myself, we of course have a mixed reputation for our food. Can anyone tell me what do you think of as typical British food? Fish and chips. Roy, that's a very interesting answer there. Tikka masala. This is a very good answer actually, but I understand that one of the most popular fast foods now in the UK is no longer fish and chips, it's actually chicken tikka masala, which of course is an Indian food. Actually, when we say Indian, but I think we usually mean Bangladeshi, which is where most of our Indian food actually comes from, I believe. So we have, you know, we're famous for our fish and chips, we're famous for apparently for our intestines, and is the reputation of English food good? Do any of you in your countries have British restaurants? No, says Lane. So I think maybe we are not so famous for our food, and I wonder if that's fair. Anna, who I know is Italian, says, are you joking? English food. Well, is our reputation for bad food a fair reputation? Maybe, maybe not.
Bryd lydmuren. That means break the sound barrier in Danish, and was the name of a project about sound, which included a video conference with university students in Turkey. There was no agenda beforehand for the Skype meeting, and the conversation ranged over the Turkish and Danish education systems and the relationship between students and teachers. So let's go absolutely vocational. And if you listen carefully, you can probably identify the cultural differences through the misunderstandings.
Degrees. We have around 22,000 students, and this is a campus university, but we have many schools in the boroughs of Muğla province, which you may have heard before, Bodrum, Marmaris, Fethiye, and places like that. We have schools there. Mostly vocational education is carried out in those schools, and we have around 800 academic staff and around 14,000 of our students live in the campus. And at the moment, we are in the campus in one of the buildings. Okay?
So it's very good to know the situation at the school.
Yes.
We want to know what is important for Turkish students when they are under education.
But my name is İlhan Kökte, and I'm studying in tourism. But before I choose I'm still interested. Why did I choose this school and why did I choose this sector? It's about your future. If you are in the, Eastern countries, you have to more think about your future, about the money, giving money. After 25 years old, you start working, and I think till 50 years old, and when we compare to Denmark or another European country, I think we are more studying than a lot of European students for our future.
Okay, nice to meet you, but I need to know how is the relationship between you and your teacher or everybody at the school, how's down in Turkey?
Well, in school it's you are away from your family, so if you are away from your family, as my teacher, they become my father, my mother.
Which future do Turkish students have from Danish education?
Actually, I haven't any idea about the Danish education system.
What do you know about Denmark? Do you know any idea?
Your capital city is Copenhagen. And you are one of the richest country in the world.
So, if we just know if you have any questions to ask.
I am Sezai Reke. Can you explain your education systems at university?
Yes, we can tell you something about it. We got a teacher here.
Hi, Turkey.
Hi.
Nice to see you all. I'm a teacher at one of the youth schools from the city called Kolin, and it's south of Aarhus. And, well, to sum it up real quickly, the Danish school system is based on a ground school from first to ninth grade. You can also choose to have 10th grade if you don't feel like you are ready to make an education choice or feel like you need to learn more. Then you can choose to go to the gymnasium or the business academy or like a technical, yeah, technical college where some of the students here are from. And that's just the three basics. And then you continue on if you want further education. You can continue on to the university or a teacher seminar or whatever, further. But you don't get a university degree if you don't go to a university. As I understand it, in Turkey, you get a bachelor degree in many different ways or in many different educations. Am I right?
Right. Yes, after high school, like after 8 years of compulsory schooling, and there is a high school education for 4 years,
yeah.
And those high schools could be general high school or technical or vocational high schools. And then there's a national entrance examination through which you can be admitted to university for a bachelor's degree or so on.
So
that's how it works, basically, yeah.
So in general, how many years it would take before you have a bachelor's degree?
Before you have a bachelor's degree, it takes about 16 years. Is that right? Yes, minimum.
Minimum 16 years.
16 years, yeah. In 16 years, you can have a bachelor's degree, if you're lucky, yeah. Okay.
Well, in Denmark, it's become more and more common to get a bachelor's degree. For example, if you want to become a teacher, they have implemented a bachelor's degree in the education, but I wouldn't call it a real bachelor, because
right.
You don't have the time, as they do at the university, to make the bachelor project, as they do.
There's a question from the public. Do your students get any kind of grant or financial support from the state when studying? How do the students finance their studies?
Education in Turkey, in state universities, is basically free. I mean, their university fees are subsidized by the state. As a default, they pay a little amount of university education fee, but we have also private foundation universities, and those charge lots of money for a year. But in state universities, it is almost free. Yeah.
You mean the educations are free of charge, but are
yes.
The students supported financially? Do they get a kind of student's salary?
Well, they can apply for grants, scholarships to different organizations like Ministry of Education, Council of Higher Education, or institutions like that, and they get, yes, as you said, like students' salary, those who are eligible to get it.
So not everybody has the possibility to get a salary.
Not really. They apply according to their economic wealth, but if they are rich enough, they don't get any support from these organizations.
Hi there.
Hi.
This is Kanikos from the Furniture and Decoration Department. And actually, I would like to introduce, in general, in my department. So we studied 4 years in university. And after the bachelor's degree, we can be teacher at the high school, and also we can work in the private sector, in the big furniture factory, as a designer, as a the production controller, and the many other things. So I would like to ask your carpentry students.
Is that
do they have to make an internship in their study?
Hello everybody, my name is Sven. It takes about 3 years to come to Hagen. So,
during their study in 3 years, and do they have to make internship? I mean, the summer work, summer.
They go to school a couple of weeks every year, and then we work with the counter, a real counter.
So I have heard about the Jamstam, and the students have to study, but not so much, and they have to go, they have to work in the sector, factory.
Yes.
And then after finish study, they have to take an exam, and then they have to pass it.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like that?
Yes. We had to have a finished project when we had to come to the class. So we have, after more or less the 3 years I've gone, then we had to finish with a project. And if we do it right and succeed, then we become an accountant.
So some of our students would like to go in the foreign country for their internship. And also would like to accept your students, maybe just study visit, and we can teach them the Turkish traditional handwork, hockey, and handcraft. And also we can accept, and then we can teach them, we can show them how we can do it. Also, we should like to send our students there.
Yeah, well, I can't decide that, but it was fun to see what you were working with, because it was so detailed and so beautiful. I was really impressed with the work you've done. So it could be fun, though, to have a, what should we call it, some of the Turkish people down here to show us how to do it. But if you look at what the Danish people use, they don't use so much details in their houses, but they might come sometime. It's also because, what's it called, we work in straight lines mostly. We don't have so many things where we cut it out and use the details.
No.
But it could be fun, though.
To
learn it and like it, yeah, you do it.
Goodbye.
So how many cultural differences did you notice? My list includes the skepticism over bachelor degrees in Denmark, because Denmark's just been forced to move away from the integrated bachelor and master system. The assumption that student support only refers to tuition fees, and the differences between carpentry styles in Turkey and Denmark. So now let's get back to that conversation with celebrity chef Jesse Dunford Wood. Could he defend British cooking? Listen while we go absolutely culinary once more and judge for yourself. By the way, you'll hear some Second Life noises during this recording, such as a camera shutter noise when someone takes a picture.
I'm really pleased to be able to introduce you to Jesse Dunford Wood. He is an award-winning chef. Jesse has also worked in various other places in the world, including Chicago and various other cities. He has a lot of international experience, and he has an ambition to bring British food to a much wider audience. Now, I wonder what you think of that. And he's been inspired by a resurgence or a rebirth of British food culture. It now gives me great pleasure to welcome Jesse Dunford Wood, and I'd ask you to give a big hand, please, to Jesse. First of all, Jesse, you're a cook, a chef, What's the difference? Let's just clear this up. What's the difference between a cook and a chef?
Well, I think we owe quite a lot in our little cooking world to the French. Lots of our dishes might be based on French dishes, and lots of our cooking words might be based on French cooking words, and chef in French doesn't necessarily mean you're a cook. It just means you're a chief or a boss or a well, you're one of the top guys. So I suppose I'm really a chef cook. In America, for instance, where I worked, there was only ever one chef in the kitchen, and everyone else was cooks. In different countries, they have different ideas, and in different countries, everyone might be called chef. And it's very, very funny. If you go into a strange kitchen and you don't know anyone's name, which you obviously don't, you just say, chef, can I do this? Chef, can I do that? Chef, where do I go here? Chef, do I do, am I doing this properly? And you don't actually need to know anyone's name. But it would be a bit different in America, for instance, where there is only one chef, and he's the head honcho, the big chief.
The big chief. Oh, that's very interesting. I can say, as a language teacher of many, many years' experience, I didn't know that the word chef actually comes from chief, even though it looks so similar. So that's interesting. Anna is asking, Jesse has said we don't have a rich food culture, but why is that? Why is it that we don't have a rich food culture? Jesse?
That's a fantastic question. Seeing as though we were kind of world conquerors for many, many years, and we've been to all sorts of countries all over the world, discovering new places and seeing new cultures, it is quite amazing that we haven't brought back lots of this delicious food that we've seen. Now, I don't know, historically, I don't know about the lack of food culture, but something that was drawn to my attention is that the World Wars really affected us in England with the rationing and things like that. We had very, very strict rations, especially in the Second World War. And I read
rations,
a funny story.
Rations, this is where
that's a very
you can have limited food supplies. So that, in other words, you can only have 3 eggs a week. And that's how it was in the UK, and I guess many other countries, after the Second World War. Sorry, Jesse, back to you.
So, during the war, obviously, there wasn't so much farming going on, and there wasn't so much production, because everyone was helping with the war effort. So, lots of the food was limited. So, you could only have 3 eggs, as you say, or, 2 kilos of flour. And everyone had to be very, very tight and creative with what little they had. And in 1948, London hosted the Olympics. So we had all these amazing athletes from all over the world coming to London. And they were going to have to stay here for maybe a month or two. And we were just recovering from quite a heavy war. And there wasn't a lot of delicious food around. And I think the British government actually sent out requests for the athletes to bring their own food, which I think is absolutely hilarious. And it's a very interesting it's very interesting that we had absolutely nothing to offer these people, and we've been trying to kind of work out what we're good at ever since. And it's only really been in the last 15 years perhaps that people have got excited about food, because everyone's been a bit, you know, it's been a bit of a function really for many people for a long time. And now it's getting interesting, it's getting fashionable, it's getting delicious and fun. And people are enjoying not just the food, but the whole eating eating with people, sharing.
I did a bit of research into the idea that the athletes had to bring their own food in 1948, and discovered that, in fact, they were offered coal miners' rations and told that if they wanted to bring more food, then it wouldn't be taxed. If you go to our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com, you can see an example of one of the memos which were flying around in 1948. This one includes the observation that the habit of regarding food as a precious commodity was foreign to the Mexican. Well, that's it. I hope you enjoy the show. The next one will be out on July the 11th, brought to you by Laurent Borgmann in Germany. In the meantime, stay tuned, won't you?
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.